Thank you, George. We're joined in our studio today by two special guests who are in the Valley today for a concert that's coming up tomorrow night at Fresno's William Saroyan Theater. It's titled Witness and Rebirth, an Armenian Journey. It's presented by the Fresno Philharmonic, and it's part of the community's commemoration of the very somber events this week, the 100th anniversary of the start of the Armenian Genocide. Joining us in our studio, we have composer Seroch Krajan and his wife, soprano Isabel Bayrakdarian. Welcome to both of you. And Isabel, welcome
Thank
back.
You.
And Seroch, welcome for the first time. Isabel, you were here a few years ago with the orchestra performing, and you have ties to the Valley, as I understand.
Absolutely. Even back then, actually, when I came to sing last time, it was wonderful to actually stay with family as opposed to staying in a hotel, because my mother, as well as my brother and his family, live in Fresno. So fast forward a couple of years later, and actually now I am living here also. So it's home more ways than one, actually.
Now, your husband, Seroch, who's with us today, is here because he is the composer of this piece that was commissioned for this occasion by the Armenian Genocide Centennial Committee of Fresno. The piece is titled Cantata for the Living Martyrs. I want to ask you about the process of putting together this piece and how that came about, but I want to start with the title, For the Living. Why that title, and what do you hope to convey with that?
Living Martyrs, in this case, has two meanings. It refers to the 1.5 million Armenians, innocent Armenians who lost their lives, but the fact that they still live within us, within the survivors. But also it refers to the survivors of the genocide, the first generation, who, even though they were saved and they didn't die, but most of themselves, in themselves, died when seeing the atrocities and seeing every loved one massacred around them.
It seems like this could be a challenging topic about which to inspire a piece of music, if not just for the sheer personal connection to the event. Was it a difficult process? Not so much the writing, but approaching something like this.
Absolutely, because it's a topic. It's an issue which really touches both of us, both myself and Isabel, because we're descendants of the genocide. And to search, for example, for eyewitness testimonies as inspiration for the text of the cantata was especially tough to read those eyewitness testimonies.
So go ahead.
And for me, actually, the second movement, it hits home on more ways than one, because the second movement is about, it's called I Bless You, and it's about the final moments between a mother and her child having to say goodbye to the son in order to save the son. The performance is tomorrow, and I have yet to sing this without being very emotional, because this story happened to my grandfather. He was 7 years old. He had to say goodbye to his mother because she was too ill to continue on this death march with them. And he remembers to the very last day, he always remembered saying goodbye and then walking away and seeing her getting smaller and smaller on the horizon and then of course turning back and not seeing her. And it was the last time he saw her. So but this is not just my grandfather's story, you see. This is so many of the survivors have stories like this. So absolutely, it's the generational trauma of what they went through has been passed on to us, just because, of course, there has not been a closure to this.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. Seroch, tell us about the piece, how it's structured, and the text that you use to inspire the music.
Well, the first movement concentrates on the event itself, the tragic event itself. It's a poem by Siamanto, who's a famous Armenian poet, who wrote this actually during the massacres, which were kind of the precursor of the genocide around 1909. And it's based on the accounts of a German missionary who witnessed the killing of 20 young maidens, which were sent to their death by dancing. And then they put petrol or gas on them and just burned them. Mm-hmm. The dance as a title, everybody would think that it's a joyous occasion. And it starts that way too, because the first part of the movement represents kind of the joyous and flourishing culture of the Armenians, which is cut short with the genocide. And then we see why it's called the dance. It's actually a sad meaning to it. So that's the first movement. And Siamanto himself moved to United States around 1912, and he became the editor of a newspaper in Boston. But he moved back to Armenia, to Istanbul, actually, about 2 months before the genocide started. And he was one of the first intellectuals who were taken away and killed on April 24.
That day, 100 years ago today, when so many Armenian intellectuals and political activists were brutally executed by the Ottoman Turks, that started the genocide that continued well into the early 1920s. I understand you also had the works of William Saroyan in mind for another part of this piece.
Yes, in the third movement, which is called Denial and Rebirth. In the denial part, I simply use a phrase which has been taught to Turks for the last generations, that the Armenian genocide simply didn't happen. So that's repeated like a mantra in the first part of the piece. And the second part, actually, when Isabel, representing the Armenians, says, "I remember and demand recognition and restitution," that's followed by the rebirth. And that's where I use the words of Saroyan. When two Armenians meet anywhere in the world, see if they will not create a new Armenia.
That's a powerful, powerful idea. Something that both of you can relate to.
Absolutely, of course.
You currently live in Canada, correct?
No, as I said, actually, we do live in Fresno. We split our time between Fresno and Toronto, but mostly actually we're here right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But maybe how you can relate to that that idea of meeting another Armenian somewhere else and having that shared bond and that shared experience.
Absolutely.
And knowing that your ancestors.
The language, of course. The language just creates immediate bond. But also the fact that we have had parallel lives of these transplanted people. We share the same background. I am the granddaughter of four survivors of the Armenian genocide, and so is Seruj. So we do have many, many things in common, of course. And yes, immediately the same sentiments rise up unspoken and without an agenda, you know, but they just do because of this immediate connection.
And as we were talking about just a moment ago and the denial by Turkey to this day that the genocide occurred, in some ways, is the genocide over in that sense as this denial continues?
Without going into the politics of today, just look at what's happening into the Middle East 100 years later, almost picture by picture, the same things are happening. You have to ask why. Could it be because it was not addressed in the first place? Could it be that it has been brushed under the rug for political reasons? But now that it's not only affecting the Armenians, it's affecting the world, it's impossible. It's almost, you have to be blind to see history repeating itself.
You also have to remember that denial is the last stage of genocide. So when you deny such an impossible crime, you're being accomplice to that crime.
If you just joined us on Valley Public Radio Today, we're talking with Serge Krajian. He is the composer of the piece Cantata for the Living Martyrs. It is a piece that was commissioned for a special concert of the Fresno Philharmonic coming up on Saturday. It was commissioned by the Armenian Genocide Centennial Committee of Fresno. The concert is Saturday at 7:30 at the Soroyan Theater, and his wife, Isabel Bayraktarian, soprano soloist, is also on the concert. Now, I want to move on from the very somber event as much as we can, I guess you could say, and talk maybe about the process of putting together a piece like this, and what is that like? I understand this is probably the biggest commission that you've had so far and the biggest palette that you've had to work with in terms of an orchestra with a chorus of over 200. What was it like, aside from the historical context, approaching something like this, and how long did it take?
Well, composition is not like I'm a pianist as well. I perform a lot of solo and chamber concerts, but composition or being a composer is nothing like that. So you can't really sit down at 10 a.m. and say, "I will compose now." That it doesn't happen. It just doesn't go that way. So you are involved, I think, 24 hours a day. When the ideas come, you have to write them down or play them or something. I mean, I even use my iPhone to just play an idea on the piano just for the sake of not forgetting it. And of course, it inspires me a lot and I'm passionate about it, but it's not necessarily great for the people around me, including my wife and my kids.
Oh, the number of times that I've actually sent the children to say, "Open daddy's door." So I send my eldest. No effect. I resort to my last weapon, which is my two-year-old daughter. Who is, he can't say no to her. So she opens up, "Daddy, dinner." And then he leaves everything and comes. You see, for a long time, we actually, and I told him, "We miss you," even though we're in the same house. We missed him. He just long hours in his studio. And as he said, unpredictable, you know, unpredictable hours when his muses would come. And he has to do it. But reality needs him sometimes. So it was a lot of, it was an interesting dynamic.
Does he consult with you and say, "Hey, come over, I want to play this for you. What do you think?
Yes,
is this something you could sing? Is this out of the range?"
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, after 11 years of marriage, he really knows me. He has written many things for me. So he really does know what I shine in and what to kind of gloss over. I'm the kind of person who actually, I'm a very good, I trust my instinct. I'm very good critical, the critical points that I give, they're very concise and they're very instinctive. And therefore, he's learned to give me products towards the end as opposed to the beginning so that he doesn't lose his way. And I just put the finishing touches on it to kind of customize it to me. So he really knows the basics. Like he really said, "Okay, what about this note? What about this note? What about this note?" And I kind of gave him a range of like a canvas with borders. He knew what to do. But to this day, actually, I can, you know, just today, there was something like, without changing the notes, Serge, can I change a little bit where the placement of the words are, you know, and he's very accommodating, of course. He has to. He just has to.
You mentioned that he will present something to you towards the end of the process. It's more of a finished product. I want to turn back to you, Serge. How do you know when you've reached the end? How do you know when this is finished? Is it ever finished?
It's an interesting process because sometimes you can come up with a phrase, with a melody, with harmonies, with the whole passage, which you think, my God, I mean, really, a moment of genius. And you write it down and you're excited about it and you even orchestrate it. And the next day you hear it again and you're not convinced. Maybe it was not so genius after all. So I just delete it, or I just get rid of it and start again. I think there, the only closure I have with this is simply the deadline that I have to submit the piece with by. And I think that's when it was, because I just, you just have to tell yourself, that's it. The chorus has to learn it. The orchestra has to learn it. And you have to stop. But I'm happy to say, after the first rehearsal yesterday, I have absolutely no regrets in what I've done, and I wouldn't change a thing.
How do you view yourself as a composer in the tradition of Armenian composers? Or do you just view yourself as a composer? How do you, I mean, in terms of Aram Khachaturian and others, do you draw inspiration intentionally from them, or is it more of the osmosis of cultural experience and composers from all different backgrounds?
The inspiration is not intentional. So I don't sit down and say, now, which Armenian theme can I use and which rhythm can I use? And I don't start there. But for me, especially in a piece which has text in it, the text is the most important part. And of course, there are some subtle quotations from the sacred music, from folk music, that come up. But as I said, it's not intentional. It is inspired, or I'm reminded of them because of the text and the subject matter.
It has to be, at one hand, a very somber occasion, given the topic that we're commemorating today and this weekend, but it also has to be a joyous occasion for you and you as a couple, for you, Isabel, to see mm-hmm. your husband, to have this great
Absolutely.
Premiere
yes.
in front of a great orchestra, and then taking this on the road this weekend
yes,
to San Francisco as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. Maybe talk about that dynamic. Just what's it like to in essence, give birth to something like this, an original work? It's relatively uncommon for something like this to happen, certainly in Fresno, to have the composer here for a premiere of a new piece
that's
so culturally relevant to the community.
Yes, it is, absolutely. Well, it was an effort that started a while ago. It wasn't just like, oh, it's here, let's just do it. It was something that was thought out from a while ago. But definitely, I mean, to perform from a singer's perspective, let me say this, to perform something that's written for you is just so empowering. You can do no wrong. Honestly, it's like the best fitting jeans ever. You know, you just want to show off. It's like that with this piece.
was that what you had in mind when you were thinking of
it? Absolutely. Well, when I write a piece, especially for voice, I always have Isabel's voice in my mind, her singing, and her each note that she sings, and the color of that, of each note that she sings, is in my mind. So if it's a G sharp, it's her G sharp. If it's a C, it's her C. So I always have that in mind when I'm building or structuring melody lines, and that has also been a great inspiration and also a reference point to write this piece.
So what you'll be hearing is written honestly and will be sung honestly, just coming straight from the heart. And that absolutely just it's humbling, it's empowering to have the opportunity, first of all, to sing this, to have the audience to sing too. Of course, this would be nothing if we didn't have the audience. And it's fantastic.
And then you take it to San Francisco on Sunday yes. at the Palace of Fine Arts Theater. That also has to be the premiere, incredibly exciting. Taking it on the road, incredibly exciting with the Fresno Philharmonic.
Yes,
that is
yes.
a very, very prestigious honor for the orchestra to be invited to San Francisco.
But I'm also very proud to say that the Fresno Philharmonic became the only orchestra in all of North America to premiere a piece specifically dedicated to the genocide. And that speaks volumes about its artistic and administrative leadership to take on something like this. And I'm very, very happy that were, I mean, the Fresno Philharmonic is going to San Francisco outside, I mean, to play outside of its regular series in Fresno.
And again, the concert is Saturday at 7:30 at the William Saroyan Theater in downtown Fresno, a very appropriate venue, I suppose. The concert also will feature Armenian sacred choral works, Khachaturian's violin concerto, and again, the piece we've been talking about today by Serge Krajian, Cantata for the Living Martyrs, featuring his wife, soprano Isabel Bayrakhdarian, who's with us today. Before we go, what do you hope, Serge, and I'll start with you, Isabel. What do you hope the audience will be, will the takeaway be? What do you hope that they will leave the theater thinking after they're hearing this? And then I'll ask Serge to close.
Catharsis and pride, for them to feel very proud that their lives do matter, especially the Armenians. You know, our lives do matter. Obviously, someone didn't think so 100 years ago, but look at us now. We have turned the survival stories to success stories, and we really have turned a corner from being victims to victors.
That's a great way to put it, Serge. What do you hope people will walk away with?
How can I add on that? I mean, it's exactly what I think, and I think it's this is the universal message I want to send. I mean, it's the Armenian genocide is a human tragedy, and it's also human to make the best out of any tragedy through resilience and survival and looking at a brighter future.
The piece is called Cantata for the Living Martyrs, composed by Serge Krajian, who you just heard, and featuring his wife, soprano soloist Isabel Bayrakhdarian, who joins us also today here in the Bonner Performing Arts Studio. The concert is Saturday at 7:30. Stephen Wilson, tickets still available for that concert. This is a one-show-only performance in Fresno. So, again, the concert also features works by Khachaturian, Antonin Dvorak, and our Armenian sacred choral works, in addition to this world premiere of this piece. Again, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank
wishing you.
You
the best for this concert and also in San Francisco and for representing Fresno so well on the national and international scene. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Valley Public Radio.